Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 12th, 2020, recording from my home studios. I hope you're having a great day. We'll start on the front page, Downtown Decatur, Piece of History. City seeks Lincoln Square Theater owner after safety issues. This article's by Garrett Karsten from Decatur. While advocates began rallying Monday to save a key historic landmark, one question loomed over their campaign and city officials' efforts to address safety issues with the downtown structure. Who exactly owns the Lincoln Square Theater? Macon County records show it belongs to Lincoln Square Theater, Inc., a not-for-profit corporation that acquired the century-old theater at 141 North Main Street in the mid-1990s. State records show the corporation was involuntarily dissolved a year ago, creating uncertainty about who can address the problems that led a city inspector to declare the building unsafe. Bricks have fallen off the building and landed in the alley on its west side. A city inspection report posted on the door last week notes there is a structural failure and orders owners to repair or demolish it within 30 days. City officials say they do not want to see the Lincoln, which in its heyday hosted acts including Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Al Jolson, Chico Marx, and Louis Armstrong, torn down. But Deputy City Manager John Kinseth said attempts to contact those listed as current and previous owners by mail, phone, and email have not yielded any results. It's indisputable there's a safety issue there, Kinseth said. Our goal is to get somebody to make the necessary investment to fix the brick, to keep the brick from continuing to fall. Then the building can sit there if they want it to, or put it back into productive use. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said there's no desire to demolish the building so long as the public safety issues can be addressed, and the legal process to do so would take quite a bit of time. We're not hauling out the wrecking ball next week to take down the Lincoln. That's certainly not going to happen, she said, speaking on the WSOY's Byers & Company morning show, where she is interviewed each morning at 6:40 a.m. Supporters have already started a campaign to save the theater. A Facebook group, Save the Lincoln Theater, had 256 members as of Monday night. An online petition urging city officials to work with the community fundraising to repair the West Wall had 245 signatures. Ownership mystery. Discussions in the supporters' Facebook group included questions about what's next and who owns the building. The Herald and Review attempted to contact several people who had been associated with the theater in the past. Former board president Adam White and former board member Jerry Johnson both said Sunday that they had not been involved with its management for years. The newspaper tried a phone number that was once associated with Ann Thompson, who is still listed as the agent for the defunct corporation, but could not reach her Monday afternoon. Greg Sullivan, quoted as a board member in past stories, also could not be reached for comment. Andrew Chiligris, whose family owned the building before it was handed over to the now-defunct nonprofit, says his family no longer has any ties to the business, but he'd like to see it restored. He said the building's crumbling exterior has caused damage to the Lincoln Square Lounge, his business located next door. It's costing me tens of thousands of dollars, Chiligris said. Referring to the roof repairs he had to undertake because of the falling bricks. I would love to see some people take some interest in it and revive it because it's just beautiful inside. Troubled history. The theater, which turned 100 in October 2016, has long struggled. People associated with its management over the years have said the aging structure needs extensive work, and finding the revenue to complete those repairs has been a challenge. It had become too dilapidated to host shows by the 1980s. There were some renovations in the 1990s, and in 2002, some hope. The state awarded the Lincoln a $3.5 million grant for further work, but the full amount wasn't delivered until 2005. At that time, the theater had seats missing, paint and plaster falling off the wall, a damaged stage, and no fire escapes. The first phase of renovations corrected these problems, as well as adding air conditioning and lighting, fixing bathrooms and dressing rooms, and repairing the marquee. The theater closed in 2005 for additional work and has been open on and off ever since. It most recently closed in 2017, around the time that several board members left. For 2 years before that, its 12-person board had undertaken a number of events to try to raise money, including showing movies and hosting events. Moore Wolf noted that someone had been changing the messages on the theater's highly visible marquee and may have been charging money to do so. "Somebody's got to be in charge of something," she said, "and city officials will continue working to contact those people. We've got to figure out how to keep people from getting hurt by falling brick," she said. "And we probably need a pretty good assessment of what it's going to take to make it at least safe to where it's not going to, you know, crumble." Kinseth said city officials are hoping the responsible party will come forward. If not, the city could take action, including closing off the immediate area and potentially hiring a contractor to plaster and hold the bricks in place. There's a photo that accompanies this article here, and it's of the Lincoln marquee taken from the side. Marquee says, "Stay safe, stay healthy, stay home." The Lincoln Square Theater at 141 North Main Street is shown Monday. City officials are seeking the structure's owner to address safety problems with the building. Let's move on to city government. Council considers reducing staff pay. This article is by Annalisa Trofimuk from Decatur. Cuts to police and fire pension funds could be on the table as an outcome of the coronavirus pandemic, but city council members won't need to make a decision for several months. The money-saving move was one of several discussed during a city council study session Monday. City Manager Scott Wrighton in council chambers for the meeting, along with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, said some staff explained several potential measures that could offset what is expected to be a major budget shortfall. The rest of the council participated in the session via Zoom, a video conferencing application. No actions are taken during study sessions. Councilman Rodney Walker did not participate. The pandemic and closure of businesses is expected to cause a sharp decline in funds that make up the municipal budget, including video gaming revenues, parking fines, and sales income, motor fuel, hotel, motel, and food beverage taxes, among other sources. Wrighton presented a list of budget-saving measures, but said, "It's difficult to predict the total impact the pandemic will have on the budget. Staff has to go off of educated guesses based on data for now," he said. Steps ranged from refinancing long-term debts to limiting the city's contribution to the fire and police pension funds for a period of time, which would not require council action until November, officials said. "There's no silver bullet to solving this," Wrighton said. Council members expressed concern moving forward with the pension measure, but said that the unprecedented times might require the move. The council last year approved hiring two community liaison officers to assist police officers with paperwork and to limit the number of members utilizing the pension fund. Community liaison officers join the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. The pension consideration comes after three fire inspectors retired on May 1st. Decatur Fire Lieutenant Todd Cox, during the public comment portion of the meeting, asked the council why it was up for consideration to not fill the jobs. "The city's proposal is to not fill those positions right now," said Cox after the meeting. "These are jobs that cannot be done by civilians. They have to be done by trained firefighters." Wright, during the meeting, mentioned how other communities have utilized civilians or off-duty officers being paid at an overtime rate. But Cox said, "Fire investigations have to be conducted by firefighters." He added the potential cuts to fire and police staff would be inappropriate as both entities are lean as it is. Council members could also consider cutting pay or hours for city staff, Councilman Chuck Cooley said. He calculated that a 20% cut in pay for staff across the board would mean an extra $5.4 million for the city. Wrighton reiterated a message he previously communicated to employees when he asked for voluntary furloughs and said the city would avoid forced layoffs. Another measure proposed by Wrighton is utilizing a clinic for city employees, which would ultimately lower health care costs for the city. Employees would still have the option to choose their health care provider, but a clinic specifically for city employees would eliminate co-payments and fulfill the role of some emergency room visits, Wrighton said. The measure was up for consideration prior to the pandemic. The meeting ended with council members offering thoughts related to the pandemic and what is happening in Decatur. Governor J.B. Pritzker last week announced plans to reopen the state by region if infection rates hit certain benchmarks. On Monday, the governor said new modeling data shows COVID-19 cases won't peak until mid-June, a month later than expected. It will take months before operations return to normal under the plan. Cooley said he worries about the long-term impact of the closure on the economy and that there may not be any businesses left when the state reopens. He said the virus impacts the elderly, who are some of the most wise citizens and should be allowed to decide if they want to go out. Councilman David Horn said their top priority should be the safety of Decatur residents. Coronavirus, the state response. Pritzker, Central Illinois on track to enter Phase 3. This article is by Peter Hancock from Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker said Monday that three of the state's four regions are on pace to enter the next phase of reopening the state's economy by the end of May, but he pushed back against suggestions that the state should begin to reopen earlier. "If we were to lift all of our mitigations entirely by the end of the month, modeling shows that there would be a new surge of COVID-19 and a higher R-naught in each of the four regions, even in the least hard-hit regions of our state," Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing in Chicago. The announcement came as Macon County announced the 16th death of a resident who had tested positive for COVID-19. The patient, a man in his 70s, had been a resident at Fairhaven Senior Living, which has been associated with more than half of the county's total 146 confirmed cases. 31 people have been released from isolation, 2 are hospitalized, and 97 are recovering at home, the county's joint crisis communication team said. The R-naught is a scientific expression that refers to the rate of spread from one infected person to another who was not previously infected. An R-naught of 2 means one infected individual will, on average, spread the disease to 2 other people. An R-naught of 1 means the disease is continuing to spread, but that it is relatively controlled. Public health officials said Illinois has an R-naught value of 1 and that the goal is to get it below 1 over a sustained period. Monday's briefing was unusual in that Pritzker and Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Zike appeared separately in a video conference from their homes, a new self-isolation measure being taken after a member of Pritzker's senior staff tested positive for the disease last week. On May 5th, Pritzker outlined a 5-phase plan for reopening the state on a region-by-region basis if those regions achieve certain benchmarks. All regions of the state are in the second phase, which allows retail stores to open for online and telephone orders for pickup and delivery, but it continues to prohibit public gatherings and requires people to wear face coverings when they are in public and cannot maintain a 6-foot distance from others. Golf courses and some state parks may open under IDPH guidelines, and hospitals can resume performing elective surgeries. In the next phase, known as the recovery, face coverings and social distancing will be required, but manufacturing, offices, retail, barbershops, and salons may reopen to the public provided they comply with capacity limits and other safety precautions mandated by the IDPH. People will be allowed to gather in public in groups of 10 or fewer. One of those benchmarks is to lower the percentage of tests that come back positive to below 20% and to keep it there for 14 days, Pritzker said. Three of the state's 4 regions are currently below that mark. And sidebar here, if you have symptoms of the COVID-19 include fever, cough, shortness of breath, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and loss of taste or smell. Do not go to an emergency room or a doctor's office unless it is a true emergency. Call your primary doctor first. If you don't have a primary doctor, you can call DMH Medical Group at 217-876-2856 or HSHS Medical Group Patient Advocate at 844-520-8897 or Crossing Healthcare at 217-877-9117 or SIU at 217-872-3800. For COVID-19 screening, the following resources are available. Memorial Health System's Respiratory Screening Clinic located at DMH Express Care East, 4455 U.S. 36 East. Open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Before coming to the respiratory clinic, individuals should call 217-876-1200 or HSHS St. Mary's Hospital 24/7 COVID-19 Hotline, 217-464-2966. HSHS Medical Group offers free virtual assessments for COVID-19 at www.anytimecare.com. Okay, moving on here. Let's find another story. I'm going to have to advance the pages. Okay, we're on page A3, local and state. And a great picture of someone playing pickleball. So, getting back out, Jim McNamara pictured and Paul Francis practiced playing pickleball on Monday in Cresthaven Park. Both from Decatur, they were enjoying being outside while playing with social distancing rules. Tennis courts, pickleball courts, and the disc golf course in Nelson Park have reopened with restricted rules of play. Woman out of control, arrested. Suspect trashed house, say police. Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur woman who went completely out of control after being asked to help clean up garbage trashed a house and had to be restrained by police before she could be arrested, a sworn affidavit said. The 21-year-old woman was jailed Friday morning on preliminary charges of domestic battery and resisting obstructing police. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. The Decatur police affidavit quotes the woman's nephew as telling officers his aunt went ballistic when his mother asked her to clean up at their home in the 800 block of Cantrell Heights at 7:30 a.m. He advised she became aggressive toward his mother and started screaming, yelling, and throwing things, Officer Robert Murray said in the affidavit. The nephew said he got up and tried to calm her down, but she started coming after him, throwing things she could grab and hitting him with the items, Murray wrote. He said he was hit with water bottles as well as other household items which were purposefully thrown at him. He said she completely ransacked the house and threw garbage all over the ground outside of the house. When the woman tried to hurl a box fan at the nephew's mother, the mother called police. Murray said the woman screamed and yelled obscenities at him and refused to put her hands behind her back to be handcuffed. I had to use a transport wrist lock in order to move her to the squad car, which she continued to refuse to get into, Murray added. I again had to use a wrist manipulation to get her into the vehicle. Man found with suspected ecstasy pill shaped like Trump, police say. Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police said a Decatur man who fled from police was found with a suspected ecstasy pill Sunday that depicted President Donald Trump. Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said the 26-year-old was pulled over around 9:38 p.m. in the 1300 block of East Main Street after attempting to flee from police. Once in custody, a suspected ecstasy pill, which was pressed in the shape of Donald Trump, was found in the suspect's possession, Copeland said. The driver earlier had failed to come to a full stop at the streets of East of Prairie and ran a stop sign near Main and East, Copeland said. Copeland said the suspect was given a notice to appear on preliminary charges of aggravated fleeing and eluding, unlawful possession of a controlled substance, and driving with a revoked license. This isn't the first report of Trump-shaped ecstasy pills being in circulation. The Washington Post reported in August 2019 that ecstasy pills resembling the president had been found by the Clearwater, Florida Police Department. Indiana State Police also found Trump-shaped MDMA in a drug bust, the Post reported. Man faces cannabis possession charges. Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police say a Decatur man is facing preliminary charges for unlawful possession of 30 to 500 grams of cannabis. Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said the 26-year-old man was found to have a total of 76.5 grams of a leafy green substance, which field tested positive for cannabis, Sunday evening inside the suspect's vehicle. He was stopped by police around 6:13 p.m. after running a stop sign at Edward Street and Garfield Avenue, according to police. It was stored in four baggies, not compliant with the state law regarding transport of cannabis in a vehicle, Copeland said. The man was given a notice to appear for the preliminary charges. Acorn reporting $256.7 million loss. Drug maker has Decatur operations, Associated Press, Lake Forest. Drug maker Acorn, which operates in Decatur, on Monday reported a loss of $256.7 million in its first quarter. On a per-share basis, the Lake Forest, Illinois-based company said it had a loss of $2.01. Earnings adjusted for non-recurring costs and stock options expense came to 36 cents per share. The generic drug maker posted revenue of $204.7 million in the period. In the final minutes of trading on Monday, the company's shares hit 25 cents. A year ago, they were trading at $4.47. The company's Decatur operations include a West Grand Avenue manufacturing plant and a packaging facility on Wickles Road. Kicking Chicago out of the state may be on Shelby County ballot. Tony Reed, Shelbyville. Voters in Shelby County who are so sick of Chicago they would like to see it carved off into a separate state may get their chance to say so in November. The Shelby County Board meets Wednesday morning, and item 5 on the agenda is whether to approve placing a non-binding question on the formation of a new ballot. The formation of a new state on the November ballot. Advocates pushing the idea have already got the question on the November ballot in Jefferson, Effingham, and Fayette counties in central and southern Illinois. Jeremy Williams, who is spearheading the ballot question in Shelby County, is a volunteer for an organization called Illinois Separation, one of several groups agitating for the Illinois two-state solution. "We want each county to decide," said Williams, 34. "But the ideal would be one state being what is now Cook County and the other state being the remaining 101 counties, but any county that wishes to go with Chicago can stay with it." What's driving all this? Williams said he and many others are sick and tired of Chicago's massive population dominating and controlling what happens in the rest of the land of Lincoln. "We believe downstate values are being overshadowed and the rest of the state is trodden upon and not heard," Williams said. "We feel like all our tax money goes up there, and we feel like we are in a vassal and serf-type system where we all work and are taxed, but not to our benefit. And Chicago, one of the most corrupt political cities in the entire world, has been the major player in putting Illinois in its ridiculous financial situation. Jessica Fox, the Shelby County Clerk and Recorder, said a simple majority vote of the 22-member county board will be enough to add the two-state question to the ballot. Wednesday's vote will take place in the open air of the 9th Street Pavilion southwest of the boat launch on Lake Shelbyville, where the board meets to allow for adequate social distancing in the time of COVID-19. Let's hope for good weather, said Fox. Rain or shine, and whatever the board vote, Williams believes he's on a winner. He said he can also petition for a two-state question to be put on the ballot and needs 731 signatures to go that route. And I'm already sitting at 850 or so, give or take, he added. Williams said he has already made multiple presentations to the county board on the issue and wants to give it the opportunity to vote on something he sees as crucial to the future of the state. There's a photo here. The Chicago skyline is shown behind Buckingham Fountain in Grant Park in 2018. Shelby County voters may get a non-binding say in kicking the city out of Illinois. Illinois economy. Self-employed finding applying for benefits frustrating. Extra step required under Pandemic Unemployment Act. Mary Wisniewski, Chicago Tribune. Self-employed workers such as piano teachers and web designers started applying for newly available unemployment benefits on Monday through a new state application portal, but there's a catch. First, they must apply and get rejected for regular unemployment benefits. The extra step provided a fresh source of frustration for self-employed workers who had previously been told they needed to wait to apply for benefits under the $2.2 trillion Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as CARES. The Illinois Department of Employment Security said on its website last Wednesday that workers who believe they are eligible for the new federal benefits under the Pandemic Employment Act must apply for regular unemployment insurance as a mandatory first step. If applicants get an eligibility finding of zero, they can then appeal the decision by providing proof of wages earned or a submitted claim through the new PUA portal, the state said. This is so confusing and frustrating, said Nancy Menard, 55, of Wooddale, an independent meeting planner. She said that the state's website had been telling self-employed people throughout April not to apply for benefits, but then changed instructions last week. She applied on Sunday and is now waiting for news. Employment lawyer Jeremy Glenn said it had been complicated for states to set up systems for awarding assistance to the self-employed. It's a product of the complexity of the system and the number of people who would apply, said Glenn, a member of Cozen O'Connor's National Labor and Employment Practice and the Chicago office's managing partner. Nothing like this existed before. The self-employed have already faced weeks of waiting under the Federal Coronavirus Relief Act, which was signed into law on March 27th. It then took the federal government more than a week to provide guidance to states on administering help for the self-employed, and the states had to set up a way to evaluate claims. The big issue was that state agencies are ordinarily set up to evaluate unemployment insurance claims using the W-2 tax form filed by companies to report wages, tips, and other compensation paid to employees. But the self-employed receive a different tax form, a 1099 MISC, and may also have to present past income tax returns and other records. Under the stimulus law, benefits for the self-employed will be calculated based on previous income, and like other jobless workers, they will also be eligible for an additional $600 weekly payment. About 18% of the state's workforce is part of the so-called gig economy, according to a report from the ADP Research Institute. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, May 12, 2020. Please stay tuned.